True Seekers, Mike Malloy here on Nova M Radio. Thanks for tuning in. You know, I think the only thing worse than their fascist tendencies for this Bush crime family is their arrogance. Mr. Karl Rove now is saying that Scott McClellan's writings sound more like a left-wing blogger. Oh, God, I want him. Karl Rove. Of course, he says that because he can't say that what McClellan wrote about is not true. ABC News tonight led with the McClellan story. Lengthy piece, must have run close to 3 minutes, which is an eternity in television news. All sorts of quotes from the book. Martha Raddatz was the reporter on this. And, of course, not a peep in her entire piece about the failure of the press. No quotes from McClellan about the absolute failure of America's news media. New York Times had it on page 16 today. Page A16. 600 words. That's it. You got to wonder, why not the front page? I mean, the New York Times, through Judith Miller and all of their writers, just, I mean, they almost were orgasmic over making this war happen. Oh, my God, back in 2002, they were right out in front, along with Fox and NBC and ABC. Yes, yes, bomb the bastard. Well, they didn't really have that on their headline, but they might as well have. I don't quite get all of this. Well, I do, and so do you. We know what's going on. We know that our so-called media now are nothing but a passel of cheap whores, no offense to sex workers, but oh my God, page A16? I was too busy today to watch any MSNBC or CNN, so I don't know if the former U-boat commander, Wolf Blitzer, covered any of this. I'm sure he did. I don't know what the take was. What the point of view, what the angle was on this particular story. MSNBC, I don't know, did Tweety Bird talk about it tonight on Hardball? Did he? I know Oberman brought it up. Oberman's going to have McClellan on tomorrow night. Oh, my God, page A16 of the New York Times. It should have been In 48 point caps. No, bigger. 56 point caps. Bush lied. Oh, well. And poor Martha Raddatz. I know that Martha Raddatz is one of the people who gets tarred with my crack White House press zombies brush. Every time I mention them, so does Helen Thomas. But there are a couple of people in that crack White House press corps that do still believe in journalism. Martha Raddatz happens to be one. So it was a shame. I felt sorry for her watching her tonight on ABC giving this piece that didn't mention the key element. The key element. Of course the sons of bitches lied, Martha. We knew this since 2002. But the key element is what you didn't do. You and your cohort. The press corps. It's what you didn't do that matters. It's not what Rove and these rat bastards did. We all know what they did. What, we're stupid? I'm talking about normal people. I'm not talking about Fox viewers and Republicans. They're over there. They'll eat anything you put in front of them. Go away, dumb people. But come on, Martha. Come on. Why not just a peek behind the curtain, just a tad? I know you couldn't. I understand. The managing editor of ABC News, who is probably, what's his name? Who's the anchor? Yeah, who's the anchor on ABC? No, that's NBC. Oh, Christ. Who's the anchor on ABC? No, he's dead. Just a complete blank. Well, it's not a senior moment because Kathy's having the same blank out. Oh, no emails. We'll figure it out. Don't tell me. All right. Charlie Gibson.
I had to remember that he and George Stephanopoulos led that hideous last Democratic debate. That's the only flash I had.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so Martha Raddatz just couldn't do it because, Charlie Gibson, who I think he's the managing editor. Usually that's what those anchor people get, along with their $15 million a year, for sitting there five nights a week to blab at us for 22 minutes, or is it down to 20 now, a bunch of horse hockey. But that's part of the contract.
Well, I get to be the managing editor.
Yeah, okay. So I that's about the only contact I had with toxic TV today was ABC's nightly news, mainly because our satellite dish was out. Don't even get me started on that, but I can tell you that at 11 o'clock this morning, there was almost a murder in this house. No, not my family. No, I'd never do that. But the geek bastard that came out here from Dish Network almost tasted lead. It was so close. I mean, just one more little provocation, and I would not be broadcasting to you tonight. I would be charged with probably second-degree murder. I don't think it would be murder one. Probably second-degree murder. It was that bad. Last night, I drew a blank on Reverend or Bishop James Pike, the Episcopal Bishop of California, and a couple of you responded last night, and he wound up in my spam filter. But anyway, JP, gave me the name I couldn't come up with. And what I was trying to remember last night, I had to do some research today, but what I was trying to remember, I knew something weird happened to him in the desert in Israel. Something weird. I thought it was a bad acid, or did he see God, or what? Actually, what happened to Bishop James Pike in the desert was he died. That's, you know, I just couldn't, on a visit to Israel in 68 to research Christian origins, Bishop Pike, and he was really a challenge to the entire religious establishment. Maverick, renegade, just wanted to kick every single musty, dusty ass in the Christian faith, who did nothing but sit back and pontificate. Pike was that way. I really liked him. But anyway, he and his new wife decided to drive from Bethlehem to Masada. The desert road they were on that was supposed to lead to the Dead Sea from Masada, and Masada petered out, and the car got stuck as they tried to turn around. His wife started down to the Dead Sea on foot while he waited at the car. She stumbled down a rugged canyon in the searing heat, but eventually managed to find help. Meanwhile, James Pike had decided to follow her, but took a wrong turn, entered a different canyon, and apparently slipped and fell to his death. After an extensive four-day search by the Israeli army, his body was found in the deep Wadi Daraja. And at his family's request, Bishop Pike was buried in the Protestant cemetery at Jaffa, the old seaport south of Tel Aviv. So I know. Nobody listening to the program tonight gives a tinker's damn about Bishop James Pike. But I'll tell you something. You ought to, and don't go to Wikipedia. There's nothing there. But if you want to, if you want to find out something about a very interesting man of God, do a little research on the Right Reverend or Bishop James Pike. Huh? Yeah? Okay. All right, quick break. We'll be back. Oh, guess what happened to one of the founders and the first president of, or CEO of Air America? Huh? Guess what happened? We'll be right back, and we will tell you. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
It's 21 past the hour. You know, when Rove and Irving Libby and David Addington and Dick Cheney sit around to figure out how to cover up their actions where it can concern the outing of Valerie Plame, doesn't that constitute obstruction of justice? Of course it does, Mike. Well, then, question two. What is restraining Nancy Pelosi? Oh, never mind. Jesus God, I know the answer to that. I've gotten a couple of emails from people who have suggested that Scotty McClellan should be, if not honored, at least acknowledged now as an insider blowing the whistle. And to that I answer, bat squeeze. Uh-uh. No. Don't even try to convince me of that. McClellan was in on everything. Absolutely. Front row seat. What is he? A complete dumbass? I mean, where it concerned his pandering to the press, the answer to that is yes. Where it concerned his understanding, his full understanding of what was going on, this little twit couldn't wait to get his book out. He knew what was going on. What, are we supposed to stop now and say, oh, well, yeah, he really didn't know, but once he was fired from the press secretary's job, it all came clear. Get out of town with that crap. Scott McClellan belongs at a war crimes tribunal just like the rest of these bastards. Oh, where were we? Oh, that's right. Evan Cohen, wanted in the state of Hawaii. He is now the managing director of local media company, the Sorensen Media Group. Evan Cohen was held in custody after being picked up by authorities at the Guam International Airport, accused of money laundering, theft, forgery, and so on and so on. He appeared in Superior Court in Guam this afternoon or yesterday afternoon to be released from custody. Evan Cohen was on a flight from Manila when he was detained by agents from U.S. Customs and Border Patrol. Yada, 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 yada. The warrant issued this past April 15th by Judge Derek H.M. Chan of the First Circuit Court of Hawaii charges Evan Cohen with first-degree theft, fraudulent use of credit card, forgery, second-degree theft, and money laundering. Now, who cares? Who's Evan Cohen? Well, he was one of the founders and the first chairman of Air America Radio. Ever since he left after a couple of scandals at the very beginning, I mean, that network just barely got launched before it was apparent that Evan Cohen had put in his chunk of money by ripping off a boys club and girls club in New York. I mean, it's just astonishing, astonishing. I've said before, I've said it repeatedly, I'll say it one more time. The people who really, Evan Cohen is no more the founder of Air America than I'm the founder of Mars. The founders of Air America were three people, Shelley Drobny, Anita Drobny, and John Sinton. The Drobnys now own Nova M, the network that you're listening to this program on. Evan Cohen showed up out of the slime because the Drobnys could not convince any rich liberals to open up their wallet and help launch a liberal network. I've gone through this over so many times, I'm sick of even bringing it up. But, you know, I love the way every time you turn around, there's a new founder and first CEO of Air America. It's like they're tracking down the Al-Qaeda top operatives in Afghanistan, Iraq. Every week they find another one. This son of a bitch, Evan Cohen, who's now been charged with all sorts of crimes, was not a founder. He brought in a huge truckload of money. This is after the Drobnys threw up their hands and said, "We can't do this. Goodbye. It's our baby. You kill it." Well, that baby is now this chunky toddler slamming from radio station to radio station across the U.S. airwaves, just collapsing of its own nasty weight. Oh, I know. A lot of stations that carry this program also carry Air America or what's left of it. Ask me if I care. I don't. So ever since Evan Cohen, it's gotten worse. Worse. So before you hear it from the pig man, you heard it here. Evan Cohen, one of the not founders of Air America. I don't care what reporting agency tells you he was a founder. He was not. He was not. He was a scum sucker that showed up with a truck full of money and said, "Hi, boys, I've always wanted to run a network." Ha ha! He's been busted. Busted. First degree theft, fraudulent use of credit card, forgery, second degree theft, money laundering. Oh, God. Oh, he was also a major contributor to the Republican Party in Guam. Karma's a bitch, isn't it, Evan? It, the invisible whip, when it strikes, it damn near will knock the eyes out of your sockets. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
It's Mike Malloy. Don't mean a thing, just lock your doors and drive
around. It's about 26 before the hour. Well, I missed it today. Spitfire writes in, you missed a lot of screaming at your TV today. All the pundits were asking the question, was the media responsible for the war in Iraq by failing to do our job and question the administration's claims? They all agreed that either they asked all the tough questions or, and this will really make you scream, they said it wasn't their job to question the validity of the claims made to go to war. They said that was the job of the Republican-run Congress. See, this is what they have become. This is what all of them, with one or two notable exceptions, what every single so-called news person, talking head, man or woman, gay, straight, Jew, Gentile, black, white, I don't care who they are, every one of these bastards on television and a huge chunk of them in print have become this. Scum. Absolutely useless where it concerns providing us the necessary information we need so we can make informed decisions, like whether or not to vote the bastards out, or, I don't know, start a revolution. Oh, God. Thanks, Spitfire. I'm glad I was away from, well, I wasn't, not so much I was away from the TV, the, those dirty, rotten dish satellite people. We didn't have a TV today, but that's all right. We were busy. We were cutting brush. Yeah, I know it's true. I know. That's why I can barely move. Too old for this. Does anyone know what the Hay Festival of Literature and Arts is? It's an annual festival held in Hay-on-Wye, Wales, for 10 days from May to June. It's been around since 1988. It was described a few years ago as the Woodstock of the Mind. The Guardian of the UK, the newspaper, has been the main sponsor of the festival since 2002, succeeding the Sunday Times. The festival has expanded in recent years and now includes musical performances and film previews. The children's festival, Hay Fever, runs alongside the main festival. This year's festival includes Gore Vidal, Salman Rushdie, John Irving, Will Self, Julian Barnes, Jimmy Carter, Jhumpa Lahiri, Nassim Nicholas Taleb, Ian McEwan, Naomi Klein, Christopher Hitchens, Boris Spatsky, Garry Kasparov, Hanif Qureshi, and James Ivory. And there was one more person there. John Bolton, former U.S. ambassador to the U.N. and wet man for the Bush crime family. You know, the scum sucker, the PNAC person, the guy who wants as much death as he can possibly cram into his useless life as long as it's somebody else. He was there. And George Monpiat, is that how you say his name, Kathy? George Monpiat, the journalist and activist who also works or writes for the Guardian, planned to arrest him. Because Bolton is a war criminal. Yesterday, in the Guardian, it says Monpiat, a columnist for the Guardian, plans to detain Bolton as he steps off the stage at the end of his talk. Monpiat said he was prepared to jump on stage and perform the citizen's arrest there if necessary. He claims Bolton was, quote, instrumental in preparing and initiating the Iraq War by disseminating false claims to the State Department, end quote, while he was Undersecretary of State for Arms Control. Monpiat took part in a debate at Hay last Saturday entitled Defeat, Why They Lost Iraq. He's been a fierce critic of the decision to launch this invasion. He said he had formally notified police of his intentions of performing a citizen's arrest. Now, that is legal in the UK. Well, it's legal here. You have to get the proper document in order to do this, and apparently he did. So that was the setup. He was going after this rat bastard. Well, today, The Guardian reports that John Bolton escaped an attempted citizen's arrest. He had been giving a talk on international relations to more than 600 people at the literary festival. Monpiat showed up with his arrest sheet. It's called a charge sheet. And tried to approach Bolton, the co-conspirator in mass death and destroyer of the U.S. Constitution. He was blocked. Monpiat was blocked on by two heavily built security guards. They held him while Bolton ran. Bolton made a dash through a rain-soaked tented village with Monpiat on his ass. A crowd of about 20 protesters, one dressed in a latex George Bush mask, chanted, "War criminal!" as Bolton was ushered away. I guess the guards caught up with him. Monpiat said he was disappointed that he had been blocked from making the citizen's arrest. He said, quote, "This was a serious attempt to bring one of the perpetrators of the Iraq War to justice for what is described under the Nuremberg Principles as an international crime." Now, interestingly, during Bolton's talk, Monpiat had asked Bolton the difference, what difference there was between him and a Nazi war criminal. Bolton said the war was legal. You dumb bastard, so was the Hitler regime. That was legal, too. Bolton said it was legal partly because Iraq had failed to comply with a key and binding UN resolution. after the end of the Gulf War in 1991. Oh, my God. On the war's legality, Bolton added, quote, "This is not my personal opinion. This is the opinion of the entire legal apparatus of the U.S. government," end quote. The entire legal apparatus of the U.S. government, you son of a bitch, has been so compromised as to render it about as effective as a roach control system operating in some small town in Nome, Alaska. Get out of town, Bolton! Someday, somebody is going to catch your ass. And you're going to wind up in front of a war crimes tribunal, John, and you will answer the charges that will be leveled against you. You will. I feel it in my bones, Bolton. Oh, by the way, a citizen's arrest in the UK can be carried out under certain circumstances by a member of the public if they believe a person had carried out a crime under the so-called Serious and Organized Crime and Police Act of 2005. So, hats off to Georges Monbiot, however you say his name, Monbiot, for at least making the effort. Can you just see Bolton surrounded by huge security guards as he is escorted away from someone waving a charge document at him? Your day's coming, Bolton. Someday you're going to be peacefully and legally charged, tried, convicted, and sentenced, as will a number of your filthy cohorts. Now, this was in McClatchy newspapers is reporting that at the western entrance to the Iraqi city of Fallujah, there are Marines there now, and when they check ID cards of people going in and out of that sad town, they give back the ID papers to the mostly Sunni Muslims who live there, and at the same time they hand them a coin. On one side of the coin it says, "Where will you spend eternity?" On the other side it has John 3:16, "For God so loved the world, he gave his only begotten son. Whoever believes in him should not perish, have eternal life." Now, the Sunni Muslims are getting a little bit agitated. Is that the right word? One Muslim said, "They are trying to convert us to Christianity." Now, remember Fallujah, that was where this bloody U.S. offensive against Sunni insurgents occurred in 2004. Horrible, from all reports, not in American media. American media are a bunch of cheap-ass whores, not, you know, no offense to sex workers, but in the global press, the slaughter. That's where they used Willie Peter, white phosphorus. That's where people were being burned alive, children, boys, men, girls, old people. Huh? Yeah, Fallujah. Now, they are being told that God so loved the world that he gave Jesus to be butchered, chopped up, executed, hanged, bled to death. And that's love, brother. That's love. The people of Fallujah are getting a little bit pissed off. Sheikh Mohammed Amin Abdel Hadi said, "We say to the occupiers to stop this. This can cause strife between the Iraqis, and especially between Muslims and Christians. Please stop these things and leave our homes because we are Muslims." In interviews, residents of Fallujah repeated two words regarding this: humiliation and weakness. The occupier is planting seeds of strife. Isn't this great?
I'm all clean, I'm all spotless, I'm all pure. I'm all washed in the blood of the Lamb. I got some bad news for you, sunshine. Take you as well. He stayed back at the hotel and they sent a
speakers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, more of Mike Malloy.
Now there's one in the spotlight, he don't look right to me. Get him up against the wall.
10 before the hour. I think the thing that really pisses me off about McClellan is I haven't read the book. All I've read mostly what was at Politico.com and what other media outlets now are beginning to pick up on regarding this screed. But where's the apology? Where is the apology to those of us not in the crack White House press corps? People that work mostly for online news sites like Raw Story, TV News Lies, Democratic Underground. They're not a news source, but I mean, they have a lot there. I mean, just on and on. I can't even tell you how many online sources and people like me who screamed about this, screamed about it, bloody goddamn murder every day. The lies. Hello, the lies. And people who listen to this program understood. I mean, you know, I've got the microphone. You don't. But you and I know exactly what this was about. So when I'm screaming, you're screaming. You know what I mean? You understand that? How about an apology, you pissant? How about at least standing out and saying, okay, you got me. Or I got myself. One of the two. Beetlejuice, 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 right? Huh? You got me. Ha ha! You guys over there in the internet was right. Yeah, he was. You called me first square. I was lying through my teeth. It was.
But
no, of course not. Are you serious? One of these scum suckers, one of these little crawly things that go scampering out when you turn up a rock, are they going to say something like, okay, listen, let me get this out. You know why they don't, of course, because they too are anticipating the date with the War Crimes Tribunal. I have a word for my feeling about the War Crimes Tribunal and disappointment, because I have this horrible feeling that the next administration here in the U.S. will pardon them. Or will ignore it, will not appoint a special prosecutor. President Obama, President Clinton, President McCain, right, well, forget McCain. You going to appoint a special prosecutor? You going to go after him after what they've done to the country here and abroad? Huh? Are you? Oh, you caught me. Firm square. You sure did. Yeah, you son of a bitch. I think I'm going over here and have a drink. Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, say my name. Say it three times. Bolton, Bolton. McClellan, McClellan, McClellan. Oh, my God. Sheila writes, Scotty was a press toady who called on male prostitute faux journalist Jeff Gannon when he needed to change the subject. Scotty's mother, Texas Comptroller Carol Keaton Strayhorn, left the Republican Party to run as an independent against Rick Perry for governor of Texas. Perry was Bush's lieutenant governor. When Scotty was booted out of the White House in 2006, he went back to Texas to be his mother's campaign manager. It got nasty. I think this book is payback, Sheila writes, for a number of things, including how the Bushies treated his mother. God, I wish Molly Ivins was here to give us a scoop. Sheila. And Thomas from Mountain Ranch, California, writes, regarding Simple Scotty, whistleblower? BS. Yeah, I agree. Thomas writes, Simple Scotty should be immediately arrested, and any monies derived from his book should be confiscated. For that matter, any member of the Bush crime family should suffer the same fate. One should not be allowed to profit from their complicity in the commission of crimes. Where the hell are all these freaking cowards when saying something at the right time would make a difference? How convenient this book release is when there is so little time left in this criminal enterprise. And for the Democratic leadership, don't even get me started. Thomas in Mountain Ranch, California. Where are the right-wingers screaming for justice here? Don't the right-wingers say that anyone's convicted of a crime and goes to prison writes a book, My Life Story, How I Started Out Stealing Hubcaps and Wound Up Murdering 17 Women All in a Row, that somebody who writes a book like that should be denied all of their... No, I'm not being sexist. That's the way these stories, these books come out, these memoirs. That they should be denied all of their profits. What about Scott McClellan? Scott McClellan was an active, involved partner in doing to the American public what the little rat bastard did for nearly an entire year until this filthy Bush crime family launched Shock and Awe. Compassion for him. Now, I'm sorry. I really do wish that I could be more new agey, that I could be more centered, that I could do mindfulness meditation, that I could just observe this stuff and let it go, that I could sit under the leafless tree in Asia and just notice and release. Notice and release. Notice and release. But you know what? I can't do that. I want revenge. I want the invisible whip. I want the universe to be put just a tad back in order. I want some goddamn air to breathe for my children 40 years from now when I'm long gone. That's what I want. Stuff like that. But wouldn't it be nice? Wouldn't it be nice, Kathy, if you were married to someone who was like, notice and release. Notice and release. Notice and release. Oh, more death. Notice and release. Lies. Notice and release. Oh, God, I'm so centered. McClellan's book be considered prima facie evidence in a murder trial, a mass murder, a war crimes trial? I think some of the quotes in the book included Bush's desire to be a great president. And as we all know, of course, from reading comic books, the only way you can become a great president if you're a wartime president. You got to be a wartime president or you're not great. So Bush initiated the Iraq War. Or something. I probably won't talk about this anymore after tonight. It's just amazing to me. Page A16 of the New York Times today. This entire story, scanned it, put it in, did a word count, 635 words. That's it. Compared to the ink that the New York Times devoted, and the bylines, and the column inches that they devoted to ginning up America's lust and demand for an invasion of Iraq. Thousands, millions, tens of millions of words, miles of column inches. And with Scott McClellan, comes out and says it was all horse hockey. 635 words on page A16. Now, of course, the Times could have checked with any number of us in the alternative media. Beetlejuice, 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 right? And I'm sure that there are just scores of us who could have given them reams of quotes about this lying, filthy regime and Scott McClellan's role in the lies. But no. Let's turn to Judith Miller, who was turning to, in a manner of speaking, Irving Libby. Okay. Scooter! That's to the New York Times. Well, tell us, Judith, what's to happen next? Oh, well, there are all sorts of bad things going on in Iraq, and we just need to bomb them all. I'll put that in my piece today. Good, Judith. Sons of bitches, I swear. William in Hollywood writes, Mike, all Scotty wants with this book is some sort of way to declare his innocence just in case someone, as if there ever would be someone, just in case someone comes after these crooks and puts them all exactly where they belong. Scotty declares, oh, I have it. I'll write a book, make a few bucks, and show I was never informed or involved. Any idiot will buy into this. Carl Rove answers, Scotty, you got to be kidding. Is that your head or is your neck blowing bubbles again? What? Is that your head or your neck blowing bubbles again? Thanks, William. Bob Kincaid, headonradio.com, writes in, Mike, somewhere along the way today, he's right about the TV I missed today. Somewhere along the way today, I swear I actually heard Karl Rove call McClellan a, quote, left-wing blogger. Well, I think what he said, Bob, was his writing sounds like a left-wing. Anyway, Bob writes, if I hadn't been able to turn and see it happening on the screen, I would have attributed it to the pain meds I'm on. I call it the limbo effect, where my mind just makes stuff up out of the buzzing world outside my skull. Yeah, I know. Well, I used to know what you mean, Bob. I don't know that stuff anymore. The strongest stuff I take is, what do I take? Motrin. Anyway, Bob goes on. But no, Karl Rove called McClellan a left-wing blogger. I think Falafel O'Reilly wrote that for him. Are we supposed to like Scotty for this? Hell no! We would, Bob writes, however, be well advised to see it for what it is. This is Scotty's little audition for the Witness Protection Program. Yeah, these low-rent redneck Mayberry mafiosi are beginning to turn. Or is it Witless Protection Program? Either that, Bob writes, or Scotty's just left a verbal horse's head in Deer Leader's bed. I'd think that would be worth a few shares of the Carlyle Group, wouldn't you? Of course, the challenge is living to enjoy the profits. Like Abe Vigoda said in The Godfather, it's only business. Bob. Headonradio.com. If you haven't gone there, why not? And at one point today, I did look up at the TV screen and damn near lost my lunch because there was this apparition kind of floating there. The lighting was bad. I have to say, sometimes the stage managers that bring these guests in and put them on the set are not very good at the lighting. But there he was. I could tell who it was because they had him fonted. Ari Fleischer. I mean, there he was. No glasses. And the worst Botox or facelift job I think I've ever seen. And it's like they hoisted his skin up, but somehow it made his lower jaw jut out, even worse than it did. But Ari, for Christ's sake, put the glasses back on! Oh, you caught me dead right. Go ahead, say it. Say it! Come on, honey, say it! Beetlejuice! And Steve at L.A. writes, Chicken Noodle News had such a wonderful Chiron titles today, like White House Puzzled and Disgruntled when discussing the simple Scotty story. They are still towing the official spin. They did not do in-depth reports about the information revealed in the book. All the talking heads look like scared children who had just been caught pissing in the cat box. Pathetic. Steve writes. Oh, my God. And Bob writes, where the F was Scott McClellan as over a million Iraqis and 4,000 Americans were fed into the war machine? He didn't want to speak up until his goddamn book was ready. Give him a shovel and make him dig graves. Yeah. Is this the last one? Okay. James writes, Mike, Brian Williams lobbed a few softballs tonight at Tom Brokaw about the simple Scotty's book and the assertion that the media rolled over for the freaks and their lies. Oh, I see. Brian Williams is sitting across from God himself, Tom Brokaw. Brokaw, as we all remember, James writes, cheer-led the fiasco with great unquestioning vigor, as did Peter Jennings and Dan Rather. Jennings is dead. Rather has admitted he failed embarrassingly. Brokaw, however, is still deflecting blame with the tenor of the times argument, the lamest excuse, that he still puts himself forward as the wise old guru only proves how shameless he really is. Of course, now we are safe with Katie and Charlie and Brian in charge. No more cheerleading, right? It's bizarro land. And I realize this stuff is distractions, are distractions. You know, we have a planet that is probably literally on its last few gasps before Gaia shakes us off its skin. We've got all these catastrophes and calamities going on places far away. What are the Chinese saying? The estimates are 10 to 20,000 school children dead because their schools collapsed, pancaked down on them during the earthquake. And we're talking about, or I'm talking, you're not, and bless your heart for it. I'm talking about I'm talking about Scott McClellan and Ari Fleischer. That's not real stuff. That's something else. That's different. You caught me. You got me dead to rights here. All right. Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Down to the river they would go, wibble wobble to and fro. But the one little duck with the feather on his back, he led the others with the quack, quack, quack. Quack, quack, quack. Quack, quack, quack. He led the others with the quack, quack, quack. Home from the river they would come, wibble wobble, ho, hum, hum. But the one little duck with the feather on his back, he led the others with the quack, quack, quack. Quack, quack, quack. He led the others with the quack, quack, quack.
He's in the jailhouse now.
He's in the jailhouse now.
He's in the jailhouse now.
The man conservatives love to hate. It's Mike Malloy.
Hey, we need some new liners, man. I'm getting sick of hearing now, man. Conservative. I mean, not your voice. I love your voice, but I'm just getting tired of it. We need to do some new ones.
What's wrong with my liners?
Oh, God. Why don't you talk loud? Mayflower Mike writes in, Mike, well, gay people can get married in California now, and that's all well and good, and as it should be. I've been married almost 40 years this September 13th, and I didn't notice today that my marriage was diminished at all because gay folk can marry. It was a day like most others. Pretty good. It might be like what Dolly Parton said. Honey, I don't mind gay people getting married. They should have the right to be as unhappy as the rest of us. It's just another example. Mike writes, so the Republicans spreading their special brand of hatred, as long as one group is mad at another for whatever reason, those groups don't have time to think about what the Republicans are doing to them. Did I ever mention that I hate these people? Mike writes. Hope you talk about Scott McCain tonight and the absolute failure of that chicken. Oops, can't say that. And the absolute failure of that chicken blank Congress to do their duty by impeaching the SOB. Mayflower Mike. Yeah, well, starting June 17th, gay folks I shouldn't even say that, same-sex people can get married. You know, what if they're not gay? What if they're just a couple of guys who want to get married? Or a couple of women? They don't have to be gay, do they? Okay. I understand. Do you know the Secretary of the Veterans Administration is some freak named James Peake? And he says that post-traumatic stress disorder and traumatic brain injury, the claims about those two traumas, the claims are overblown. He says they are like football injuries. VA Secretary James Peake, this is from VetVoice.com, continued to show little respect for the service of America's newest veterans yesterday by dismissing concerns about the effects of PTSD and traumatic brain injury in troops returning from Iraq and Afghanistan. Apparently, this rat bastard, James Peake, was in Alaska with Senator Ted Stevens, who belongs under a jail. He was in some remote Alaskan village, and it was there that the VA Secretary Peake first used the word overblown when discussing PTSD and TBI and then made a football comparison. This is how the Anchorage Daily News reported it. A Vietnam veteran in Bethel, Alaska, John Gwynn, told Senator Stevens and Secretary Peake that he, the veteran, the Vietnam veteran, was worried about what's going to happen to the village soldiers when they come back from the Middle East. The Vietnam vet said, everyone is proud of them now, but what happens in a few years when these men, highly trained in combat, can't find jobs, start drinking and going a little crazy? He said, the Vietnam vet said, there aren't people in tiny villages trained to deal with mental health issues. And then the Vietnam veteran John Gwynn said, I'm scared. It's going to cause a commotion in the village. Well, at that point, VA Secretary Peake suggested some of the concern about post-traumatic stress disorder and traumatic brain injury has been overblown. Secretary Peake told this Vietnam vet, many of the brain injuries are serious, but some of them are akin to what anyone who played football in their youth might have suffered. Son of a bitch. VetVoice.com says, frankly, Mr. Peake's casually dismissive attitude sucks. Being hunted by other humans every day for 15 months, watching your friends bleed to death, having your brain flattened like a pancake from a 1,000-pound detonation are not comparable to football injuries. It's also quite clear, Brandon Friedman writes at VetVoice.com, that this was neither a misspeak nor a quote taken out of context, as this was the second day in a row that Peake has belittled the combat injuries sustained by those fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan. On Saturday, Peake suggested that PTSD was being, quote, overdiagnosed, end quote. He then continued, quote, just because someone might need a little counseling when they get back doesn't mean they need the PTSD label their whole lives, end quote. Now, when you add this to the extraordinarily high number of suicides among veterans, and you add that to what we talked about the other day, VA officials have been recently caught instructing caregivers to diagnose returning troops with adjustment disorder instead of PTSD in order to screw them out of whatever benefits they might get. Isn't it time to take Secretary James Peake and armor him all up, give him a weapon, and put the miserable, squeaking son of a bitch right in the middle of, oh, I don't know, Fallujah, and hand him a backpack full of coins that say on one side, how are you going to spend eternity? On the other, for God so loved the world, he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him shall not perish, but have everlasting life. And then make VA Secretary Peake stand on the corner and say, hey, ragheads, come here and get this little coin. Come here, boy. Here, look here. You see that? Now say it. Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice.
I got infrared, I got GPS, I got that good old-fashioned list. No price too high for freedom, so be careful where you tread. And you can come along, or you can stay behind, or you can get out of the way. Our troops take out the garbage for the good old USA. I rack 'em up.
Well, I owe it to the families to be as, you know, to be in solidarity as best as I can with them. And I think, you know, playing golf during a war, it just sends the wrong signal.
What? Is everybody aware of this Dunkin' Donuts story? I can't not mention this. This freakish Michelle Malkin, who is a a talk show host on Fox Radio? No, she's Fox News commentator. She started this. There's a Dunkin' Donuts ad with Rachel Ray, the cooking or the eating person, you know.
Well, she is a little scary.
Rachel Reyes?
She could be a terrorist.
Anyway, she's standing there in this ad, and she has on a scarf that, if you are insane, might look like a keffiyeh. That's the traditional headdress worn by Arab men. It's a print ad. And Michelle Malkin got off foaming at the mouth, and in her syndicated column wrote, "The keffiyeh for the clueless is a traditional scarf of Arab men that has come to symbolize murderous Palestinian jihad." Now, the scarf looks like, if you're an insane person, it might look a little bit like the headdress that Yasser Arafat used to wear, and a lot of Arab men wear as part of their traditional dress. But Malkin, in her column, you know, snotting and puking all over herself, said, "Popularized by Yasser Arafat and a regular adornment of Muslim terrorists appearing in beheading and hostage-taking videos, the apparel has been mainstreamed by both ignorant and not-so-ignorant fashion designers, celebrities, and left-wing icons." Oh, man, she's on my list, too. When the lights go out, Michelle, oh, well. So anyway, she calls for a boycott of Dunkin' Donuts. All right, now, we all know that Dunkin' Donuts coffee tastes not a whole lot different from panther urine. And how do I know what panther urine tastes like? Don't ask. But that's what Dunkin' Donuts, my God, if you want a heart attack and have your brain just kind of like zip itself up and run screaming out of the room, drink Dunkin' Donuts coffee and eat a couple of their donuts, right? Seriously. It's awful stuff. It's horrible stuff. But anyway, in this online ad, Rachel Ray is wearing a black and white silk scarf with a paisley design selected by her stylist for this advertising shoot. No symbolism intended, nothing. So what happened? Dunkin' Donuts has decided to drop the ad. And, you know, all the intimidation because Michelle Malkin, having nothing to do with her hands, comes up with this. "Michelle, I have something you can do with your hands if you need to keep busy, you sly little devil, you." Now, according to the Boston Globe, for her part, Malkin was pleased with Dunkin' Donuts' response. She wrote, quote, "It's refreshing to see an American company show sensitivity to the concerns of Americans opposed to Islamic Jihad and its apologists," end quote. Jesus H. Christ, is that what we've come to in this country? Well, in the first place, I did a little checking, and hey, Michelle, I don't think Dunkin' Donuts is owned by an American company. I think it's owned by a company, a French company. So there's something for your next column, you psychopath. It's owned by, what is it, Pernod? Who owns Dunkin' Donuts? Damn it. Pernod Ricard? Yeah, I think. Here it is. For a while, Dunkin' Donuts and its other quick service brands, Togo's and Baskin Robbins, were owned and operated by Allied Domecq. How in the hell do you pronounce D-O-M-E-C-Q? That company has since been bought out by Pernod Ricard for its spirits and wine division, breaking off the quick service brand to create Dunkin' Brands, the current owner of Dunkin' Donuts. So Dunkin' Donuts is owned by Dunkin' Brands, which according to Wikipedia is owned by Pernod Ricard. I guess. I don't know. I just, you know, what is a Michelle Malkin to begin with? Every once in a while on what's-his-name's program, Keith Olbermann's program, I see a picture of her. She looks like somebody who has just gone through unexpected electroconvulsive therapy. Like they just snuck up on her, grabbed her, slapped the electrodes to her skull, and hit the switch. I realize that Olbermann will use photos of the people he's roasting in his worser and worse section that are not, how to put this, flattering. But this picture of her, does she really look that way? What a ghoulish, strange person. Is that Michelle Malkin? Is she the one Hannity is having an affair with? Is that who it is?
I thought that was Dr. Lara.
No. Even Hannity wouldn't have it. No, I think.
Are you sure it's not Ann Coulter?
No. Ann Coulter and Sean. No. Sean has, and I know this. I know this to be true. Sean is having an affair with Michelle Malkin. And I don't know. So it you'll know that's true if you hear this story on Sean's toy program. Oh, wait a minute here. Jackalope says 40% of Dunkin' Donuts is owned by the Carlyle Group. You know, I sometimes think half of my blue jeans wardrobe is owned by the Carlyle Group. Sons of bitches own everything, don't they? Huh? Don't they own everything? Carlyle Group? Oh, now Steve sends in the Carlyle Group. Well, I'm I'll go with Pernod Ricard. I'm sorry. I'm just going to go with them for major ownership. Not that I give a damn. Like I said, it's like drinking scalding hot panther urine. That's the thing. Now, tell me the truth. Have you ever gotten a cup of Dunkin' Donuts coffee if you've been insane enough to go get it? And I was. There was a time in my life when I didn't know the difference between panther urine and actually good coffee. Huh? Oh, okay. The kind of coffee you get from Bob. From, what's the name of his company? anyway, if you've only ever drunk coffee that tastes like panther urine, if you go to superbeans.com, you will expose yourself, so to speak, to some really good coffee. But Dunkin' Donuts, what they lack in flavor and body and aroma, they make up for in these incredibly high temperatures. This stuff, I don't know how they've done it, but they've managed to exceed the temperature at which liquid boils, that water boils, you know, 212 degrees, is that right? And somehow they've managed to go just past that, and the coffee won't boil. But God help you when you pick up the cup. You know what's going to happen, especially if you take a sip of it. But I digress. Oh, Michelle Malkin. All right, quick, let's get Dick on, who's calling from Seattle, listening on KTPK. Hey, Dick, what about Michelle Malkin?
Well, we used to have to put up with her. She had a column in the Seattle Times for a while.
Yeah.
I think she became a refugee when the Filipinos overthrew Marcos.
Is that where she's a Filipina?
Yeah, she's a Marcos type, I think.
Ah.
But, hey, I was listening today to Tom Brokaw working damage control on why he and his fellow journalists weren't so complicit, you know, in providing cover for the Bush's war and the Iraqis.
Right.
You know, with Scott McClellan's charges. And, you know, Brokaw, by the way, was attributing a Cold War quote about falling dominoes to Kennedy. You know, that's an Eisenhower quote.
Right.
And his network, you know, continued to give cover, I noticed, to the attack on Valerie Plame by minimizing her status, calling her a CIA operative instead of the covert agent that she was. This was
right.
A Bush tactic. And then Brokaw offered the lame excuse, you know, that they were misled in their support for this war and were no worse than Congress, you know. But wasn't it their job to find out these facts from Congress?
Yeah, you know, the Congress is not protected by the First Amendment.
No.
You know, Tom Brokaw was.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's just insane. When I hear that, I don't know, I want to start ripping things to pieces. I want to start gnawing through the insulation on wires. Just anything, you know, shoving an ice pick into my leg. I cannot believe that Brokaw. Well, yes, I can.
Oh, I can.
Yeah, yes,
hey,
I can.
And be aware that Scott's dad, Barr, did the same thing. He took on the bad guys of the book, exposing them too.
Yeah, yeah.
Blood, Money, and Power, except he was talking about the Kennedy assassinations. Nobody gave much coverage to the book.
Nah. Why care about that one, right? Dick, I got to go. Thanks, pal. I appreciate you checking in. We'll be right back.
Border and coast to coast, the Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
10 before the hour, Tony in Easton, PA writes regarding PTSD. Little mention is being made of the fact that county departments of human services are using a diagnosis of PTSD to remove custody of children from affected parents. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. Thanks, Tony. I wonder if this creep who runs the VA, he talks about, well, you know, it's like a football injury, you know, if he's aware of that. Sons of bitches, I'll tell you, there, some GI, I just have a feeling that some, maybe more than one, some GI who comes back from Bush's war in Iraq and is going to put two and two together and come up with four, not five, which is what they told him in the U.S. military. And he's going to figure it out, just like Timothy McVeigh did, and he's going to go absolutely ballistic. And there's not going to be one to help him. As a matter of fact, Becky writes in, who will take care of the vets when the VA fails to do their job? Mike, I'm a mental health advocate, which I became because of my own experiences in the public and private mental health systems. I've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly of mental health care. I've been concerned for some time about the VA's willfulness to ignore and deny services to GIs who have served the country. Do you know where they will go? Whose responsibility it will be to provide some level of care for them? It will fall to the public mental health system, which is seriously underfunded in nearly every state, where it's difficult to find competent care that is provided with dignity and respect for the people who, by reason of being poor and lacking insurance, have no other choice for services. Providers in the public mental health system, as well as its administrators, are poorly equipped to address the needs of people who experience PTSD caused by abuse, car accidents, natural disasters here in the U.S., let alone the PTSD that is caused by warfare. Because, Becky writes, the public mental health system is already overburdened, our veterans will end up self-medicating with drugs and alcohol, which often create secondary problems that will eventually cause our vets to end up in jails and prisons. This is not an acceptable outcome for our veterans who serve their country. Becky. The aftershocks of the Bush crime family's 8 years in power and the Republican powder of the Republican Party's total destruction of self-government are going to be felt for a long, long time, decades. And this is one of the areas that is going to ripple through the society seemingly endlessly. The condition of these veterans coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan. How did this happen? How did this happen? Kathy's calling from the Oregon coast, listening on Sirius. Hey, Kathy.
Hey, how are you doing today?
I'm all right.
By the way, you know, I'm in the Vietnam era, and I had a friend, a good close friend. When he came back from Vietnam, he was not diagnosed with having any problems whatsoever,
right.
And he ended up putting a gun in his mouth.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, I want to talk about something different and better, because Bugalosi, the one that wrote Helter Skelter, he did Helter Skelter with Charles Manson and all that.
Right.
He wrote a book now, and it's coming out, and it's about bringing Bush to trial for murder.
Yeah, I've seen the blurbs. I haven't yet gotten into that. I had Bugliosi on one time when he wrote something about a very quick book about the theft of, I think it was about the theft of the two, no, it wasn't about the theft of the 2000 election. It was about something regarding Bush, and I'm drawing a blank. But we had him on. This is several years back. We're going to try to get him for this particular
book. Oh, good.
Yeah.
You know, he was talking about having all the prosecutors come out and actually, whoever, you know, whatever state or city or whatever that they're from, if they had people die in Iraq, that they file charges against George Bush.
Yeah, there is, apparently there is legal, not precedent, but it is legal for any state attorney, is that right, to, if Bush is in the state, to file murder charges. And, I completely agree with all of this, only not just Bush. I want to see Dick Cheney in the dock. I want to see him on trial when all of a sudden he starts screaming for another pacemaker. Now, that's real Schadenfreude on my part, but I can't help it. These people are killers. They are sneaks, liars, thugs, murderers. They have debased everything about this country. No mercy. No mercy. I'm sorry. Like I said earlier, I wish I could just say, you know, just observe and release. But I can't. You know, I can't do it. I can't do it.
You know, so. I have to tell you, my blood pressure actually goes up when I listen to you, because you say the things that almost exactly what I'm thinking. But it really helps to hear someone say it. So I thank you so much for being on the air and doing what you're doing. I really, really appreciate it.
Well, that's very kind. Thank you, Kathy. Thanks for being there. Thanks for spending some time with us. Take care. We got a break here. We got a break? We still have 15 seconds. Oh, well, I hung up too quick. Sorry, Kathy! All right, we have the big top of the hour break here. So if you want to take a break and, you know, go outside, go for a little walk, maybe use the bathroom, fix yourself a cheese sandwich, make a stiff drink, you know, whatever you want to do, because this is a long break. But do come back, all right? We have more to talk about, and your phone calls. The number here is 800-989-1480. All right, I'll see you on the other side. Stay with us. Oh, and remember, Democrats are always sexier than Republicans. Who ever heard of a nice piece of elephant? Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
stick to the story in your eyes. It's been shining down upon me now.
Hello, am I on? Welcome back, 7 past the hour. Oh, here it is. The Betrayal of America, How the Supreme Court Undermined the Constitution and Chose Our President. That was the other one I was trying to think about by Bugliosi. Bugliosi called it a judicial coup d'etat that stole the election from U.S. citizens and simply handed the presidency over to the Supreme Court's guy, a conservative Republican like themselves. We need to get him on, Gabby. All right, anybody want to talk? The phone number here is 800-989-1480. I got behind the other night, so there are a couple things here I want to throw into the mix that are two days old. This is from Pam, who writes... regarding Decoration Day, she writes, I grew up in southeastern Ohio, a small town called Byesville. Memorial Day was called Decoration Day. It was always the 30th of May. All the graves were decorated with flowers, and the vets had flags at the foot of each grave. It was a fun day. Half the town marched in a parade to the graveyard, while half the town watched. I was in the Girl Scouts, so I got to march. I remember it being both solemn and fun. They still decorate the graves, but they don't do the parade anymore. Last night I watched Recount on HBO. Before it started, I saw the end of a documentary where some actor I didn't recognize interviewed vets who were horribly injured in Iraq. It was heartbreaking. I was crying by the time the movie started. I wasn't sure I wanted to relive the nightmare that brought us this insane government, but to see this movie, Recount, after watching the documentary made me even more angry. I realized that we just can't let Bush and Cheney walk away from this mess without any consequences. I think a guilty sentence won't just cut it. I think these worthless bastards should be made to go to Walter Reed and personally care for the victims of their senseless war. They should have to wash the wounds, change the beds, change the bandages. They need to see the actual outcome of this illegal war. They should spend the rest of their lives and every cent that belongs to them caring for those who believed their lies. They need to be shown to the world as the ugly wrecks of human excrement that they are. They have to come face to face with what they have done. These guys, Bush and Cheney, are true psychopaths who need to have their crimes shown to them for what they really are. They need to pay for what they have brought to this country and the earth. A mere guilty sentence won't cut it. Sorry, Pam writes, I didn't mean to run on, but sometimes I just hope that somehow, some way, these guys will have to pay for what they did. I just have to believe that. Pam, her last name. The thing that what's the word I want here? Intriguing? That sounds sort of coy. Well, let's try it. The thing that is intriguing to me is the emotion that so many people who write to this program put into an email. I mean, it's very clear what you are feeling when you write to this program. I know most of us, when we are calling into a talk show, we hold back. When I get interviewed for somebody else's talk show, I usually hold back. There's just something about being on the receiving end of that, right? Where you just go like, I hate calling in to or being on the end of the phone where someone else is asking you questions or someone's listening to what I'm saying on the phone, and it's just like, oh my God, I can hardly stand it. So that's why I understand when people call the program here. I'm not talking about the crazy right wingers, but just normal folks, Democrats, liberals, progressives. When you all call I understand that it's a little bit nerve wracking. Especially if you're sitting there on hold and your ear gets sweaty and all that. But, excuse me. So it's hard to put the emotion in those phone calls. But the emails that we get at this program are just sometimes are astonishingly down to the bone. People don't hold back when they write here. And I appreciate it. I mean, the fact that... I don't know how to say this without sounding a little bit smarmy, but the fact that we can be trusted here on the Molloy program to get these emails and read them and, yes, share them. I mean, you know, we don't try to embarrass anybody with what you've written by mocking it on the air, especially the ones that are so heartfelt. But I am just humbled by the fact that people will write from a gut level. Now, I don't know. Do they do on other radio programs? Okay, I have no earthly idea. I really don't. I don't know. Maybe Randy gets those. Maybe Hartman. Maybe Bob Kincaid over at Head on Radio. I don't know. I appreciate the fact that people trust us here to do that. All right. Phone calls? Do we have any? Oh, we do? Oh, damn. Just kidding. All right, let's start with Addie, who's in Miami listening to WINZ. Addie, welcome to the program.
Yeah, welcome to you to take my call.
Sure.
I haven't called talked to you since I welcomed you back in.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And tonight, I wanted to ask you about the votes in Miami. And the votes in Minnesota, and they're having a meeting on it on Saturday.
Okay, you're talking about the Florida primary and the Michigan primary, Addie?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. And you want to know what I think about that particular issue?
Yes.
Well, Lord. The Democratic National Committee made a rule that the candidates... It's my understanding all agreed to abide by. Everybody from Kucinich to Obama to Clinton, all of them agreed to abide by it. State of Florida, that was run by Republicans, decided to be mischievous, as they usually are, and moved up the date. I'm not sure exactly what happened in Michigan, probably the same thing, but Michigan, I think, I don't know if they're, I guess their legislature is run by Democrats, I don't know. Anyway, these two states changed the days, or at least Florida did, I'm not sure about Michigan, changed the day on which they would hold their primary. And the DNC had told these candidates, no, you know, don't do it. We want to do it this way. Now, in the first place, I think that's bogus as hell. But they all agreed to it. All the candidates agreed to it. So in Michigan, Barack Obama's name wasn't even on the ballot. I think he requested it be removed because he was trying to abide by the rules. I think. I haven't paid that much attention to this, Addie. And in Florida, both candidates' names were on the ballot, but I don't think Barack Obama campaigned down there, and I believe Hillary did. I think. Maybe not. I don't know. I don't know. This was a case of the Democratic National Committee trying to jigger the results to get what they wanted. And what they wanted was Hillary Clinton to snarf up the nomination very quickly, so that they could focus on defeating the Republican, whoever that was going to be. What they didn't expect was the popularity and the energy and the drive of Barack Obama. So now, having said all that, what do I think should happen? I think the Democratic National Committee should cough up the money and pay for two primaries, one in Florida and one in Michigan, or... If that's not good, that's A. B would be to split the votes in both states, give half to Clinton and half to Obama, which if you're going to do that, you might as well stay at zero and do nothing. And the third thing would be to say Beetlejuice three times and release all the demons in hell onto the face of the earth to eat everybody, and we're finished. I'm sure there's a fourth option there, but I'm not sure. I don't know, Addie. I don't know what the hell to do. I really don't. It's screwed up. It's really screwed up. But, you know, if you're going to make a rule and agree to abide by the rule, why not abide by the rule or something? I don't know. I really don't. We'll be right back after the break. I'm sorry. I'm Mike Molloy. This is Nova M.
This is your liner for the Mike Malloy Show until I think of something more clever to say. It's Mike Malloy.
It's 21 past the hour. Email from Jennifer and then to your phone calls here. Jennifer writes, Mike, I'm an active garage sale addict. I don't apologize for it. Today I stopped at 6 sales. This was Saturday, I guess, in about 2 hours. 3 of the sales were homes on the brink of foreclosure trying to make some last-minute cash from their belongings. 2 were trying to catch up with those horrible predatory payday lending places. And 1 family wanted to buy diabetic medicine. I've never seen this before in 30 years of sale-ing. I usually come home from my mornings excited about some wonderful cast-off. Today I came home feeling equally guilty and grateful that I still have a garage. Yeah, tough times for most of us, for real. I saw something on the TV the other day, though, some twit. The story was about more foreclosures. I don't know, maybe it was on one of the financial channels or Bloomberg TV or something. But it was about this absolute disaster that has hit hundreds of thousands, a couple of million, and it's going to, I understand that this is not going to peak until the end of 2009. I guess it depends on who you listen to. But story after story of people who are losing their homes. In some instances, people who rent and who've always, you know, paid the rental payment on time, but they're living in a house that's owned by somebody who's not making the mortgage payments. So they, the renter, has to move. And these families being turned out, children being turned out, old people being turned out because of what the predatory lenders did to so many people. You dirty bastards. The list of dirty bastards in this country is endless, isn't it? Huh? But in this program, and here's the point, they had some slick, weaselly-looking real estate salesman who, no problems for him. No, I sell only the high-end properties. As a matter of fact, business is booming for me, you know. My properties start at $4 million. And trust me, I can't hold on to them long enough. Just zip, zip, zam, zam. So I understand that I've heard that there's a mortgage crisis going on somewhere. But it's not with my clients. My clients are well off, I guess is the way to put it. They don't worry about things like, oh, is it 5% or 7% mortgage or 3.9%? They don't worry about down payments. And I swear to God, I watched this guy for, I don't know how long he's on, 90 seconds. And I just wanted to I don't know. See, here comes the violence again. Oh, my God, I really need help, Kathy. But when I see stuff like that, I just feel like I want to hurt them. I want to cause physical pain to people like that. That's awful. That's not healthy. Why can't I do mindfulness meditation? I tried TM. That didn't work. Tried mindfulness meditation. Closest I get to it is walking 4 miles a day with my iPod on, listening to Pink Floyd or the insane laughter of recorded from Three Penny Opera or something. Maybe you feel the same way. I keep telling myself, and I keep getting older and closer to death. I keep telling myself at some point I'm going to learn how to meditate. I'm just going to, and I realize that's kind of a contradiction in terms, but even so, I'm just going to do it. I'm going to do it. And I read all this stuff about, in New York Times yesterday in the science section about mindfulness meditation, mindfulness awareness, or whatever the hell it's called, how that's replacing so many therapeutic approaches to people's screw-ups. And, you know, well, my dad beat me. Well, my mom never liked me. Well, you know, my brother always got the big piece of chicken. You know, all the stuff you deal with in therapy, all that stuff, right? And mindfulness. But, I just can't get to it. So, you know, I'm stuck. I'm kind of trapped in this. When I see the guy on TV who says, well, my clients don't worry about things like down payments, please. All I can think of is, you know, please come off the TV. Come here in my living room and let me dismember you, with a serrated steak knife. Just, I can't stand it. I really can't. I got to do something about this, Kathy. I got to figure out a way to transcend all of this rage. It's just absolutely not healthy. We have a break? I think we do. All right, we'll be back after this break. And enough about me. Let's talk about whatever you want to bring up on the phone call here. All right, 800-989-1480. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. About 26 before the hour. Malloy here on Nova M Radio. Let's go back to your phone calls. Frank is calling from Cleveland, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Frank? Okay. Huh?
How are you? How you doing?
I'm all right, Frank. Hello? All right, Frank, you disappeared. Try again. Ethan is calling from Portland, listening on the internet. Ethan, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, Ethan.
It seems to me that anyone in the Bush administration that has any power over what the media knows about things that are going on, any power over what happens, will go with what Bush says and Cheney says and what Karl Rove says, and then leave the administration, go to Fox News, and get a good book deal.
yeah.
So I'm just like, what do we do about this? These guys are just getting money and rewriting what some people think about them by doing this. Do you have any ideas?
I do, but I would probably get in trouble if I said them over the radio, Ethan. I honestly believe that Bush and Cheney should have been impeached. That means indicted months ago. Once these fake ass Democrats retook the House and the Senate, I think they should have been impeached. They would not have been convicted in the Senate because there are too many Republicans in the Senate who are also criminals and scum and cowards. But at least the record would have been out there. The House Judiciary Committee could have held hearings as long as necessary until they finally decided to take a vote on the articles of impeachment that would have presented themselves. All they had to do was bring in people to testify about what these scum have done. So, short of removing them from office, the second the best thing would be to impeach them, to indict them, so that the record is there for future generations to see what these bastards did. But aside from or short of those two events occurring, About the only thing we can do, Ethan, is to appreciate the gallows humor in all of this. I guess I'm not saying don't get pissed off, because if you're not angry, quick, take your pulse. You may be dead. I think all we can do, Ethan, is appreciate the gallows humor here, and hope to God that, or to somebody or something, that we can get through the next few months and get rid of these people for once and for all. Now, that may be wishful thinking, because if the Democrats self-destruct, as they are so inclined to do so often, then we're going to wind up with the third Bush presidency, and that'll be John McCain. If we get Hillary Clinton, it'll be the fourth Bush presidency. If Barack Obama, I don't know. I'm willing to roll the dice on him. But anyway, so not that I'm without hope, Ethan. It's just you got to learn to laugh, pal, okay? You know, catch and release, all right?
All right.
All right. Thanks, Ethan. Got to go. Appreciate you checking in. Robert is calling from Tyler, Texas. Hey, Robert.
Hey. This is Mike?
Yes, sir.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, Robert.
I wanted to get your comment on Dick Morris. He was on Airways tonight saying he's coming out with a new book that the serious left is going to shut down the right. And he was going to explain it, and I flipped it on back to Keith Olbermann, but because I don't really listen to Fox. But anyway, I just wanted to get your comment on it.
Well, I don't know. I missed it. The only thing I know about Dick Morris is he is he's another sniveling little bastard that likes to suck people's toes. That's all I remember about him. I know he was an advisor or something to the Clintons until they got a divorce. Morris, I guess. Told tales out of school, as they say, about the things that he saw, personal things, not political things, in the Clinton White House. I don't even remember. I seem to remember that as the story. As far as Dick Morris is concerned, I never could figure out what it was that he did, Robert, in the Clinton White House. I have no idea what Dick Morris ever did. All I know is he just seemed to me to be kind of a squirmy little halfwit who sucked toes or something. So the fact that he is appearing on Fox News or appearing anywhere, just, you know, whatever. Thanks, Robert. I appreciate you checking in. Take care, pal.
You know who we haven't heard from on any of this McClellan stuff?
Who?
Foxy the Snowman. Didn't Tony Snow just come out all fresh-faced and looking healthy and as a new reporter or anchor or something for CNN?
I'm not trying to be cute here, but he had a relapse.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, seriously. Yeah.
I must have been asleep that day.
No, we got the press release that he was joining CNN as a commentator or whatever. And I think it wasn't 24, 48 hours later. I believe. I may have this wrong, too. You know, blah, 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 blah. This is the Malloy program. You never know what the hell is real here. But I think the follow-up to it was that he got ill again, relapsed, and...
Never mind.
Okay. Tony is calling from Los Angeles, listening on KTLK. Hey, Tony.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm good. I just called to say when you were talking about karma.
Yeah?
It's coming back full force all the way around.
I hear you. Rather than karma, I had a musician friend who used to refer to it as the invisible whip.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, when folks did things that were not nice,
mm-hmm.
however you want to interpret that, whether it was starting a war or cheating on their spouse or being snotty to their child, whatever it was, stealing a pack of bologna from the store, whatever it was, when people are not nice...
Mm-hmm.
The invisible whip, it comes out of the infinite and goes, pew, you know.
Yep.
And you can feel it.
Yep. Everybody can look in their own life. You know when you're getting back something you did.
There you go.
You know what I'm saying?
I do.
I mean, we all can sit down, think hard long enough. You're like, damn, that's why that happened.
Yeah, but Tony, you know, you have to have a moral sense in order to see that. I don't think that somebody like Karl Rove... or Dick Cheney or George Bush would ever figure out
mm-mm.
when the invisible whip hits them that it is in response to some kind of a wave they set up with their behavior. I just don't think they get that. I think you have to have some sort of a moral center, or at least an ethical center that
you do.
That allows you to see that and say, oh, that's what that is.
Right, but you gonna get it anyway, whether you see it or not.
Well,
you
that's
know, like
true.
You
that's
said,
true
they're
too.
Psychopaths.
That's true
like
too.
You said. The you know what I mean?
Yeah, the invisible whip doesn't care if you notice it or not. It's gonna get your ass. That's
it, and it ain't no ass whipping like that one.
There
you
is,
know what I mean?
There is no ass whipping like that one.
So that's all I had to say.
All right.
That people got to realize, you know, everybody. I mean, in the whole cosmic, the whole way I look at stuff, that's what's happening right now. You know, like you always say, black people been dealing with it. You know, that's why we got high blood pressure. But we've been dealing with hard times or, you know, these inequities all the time. And I think we're just coming into kind of an awareness, I think, age of awareness. That is going to show people, you know, when you heard the old song, The Fifth Dimensions did, remember the
right,
Age of Aquarius?
Right. Age of Aquarius,
well,
yeah.
Basically, Aquarius, that's what that's about, you know, the balance, you know, finding, you know.
I hear you, sure.
Yeah, and that's what people are coming, they're going to have to see it, they ain't going to have no choice.
That's right.
You know,
that's
and right. I'm not voting for Hillary, I don't give a doggone what, girlfriend will just vote for Cynthia McKinney. Hold on, you know what I mean? If they give her this nomination, because the way black folks look at it, we catch hell all the time anyway. So whether it's McCain, it don't matter to us. We gonna deal anyway.
You're still gonna get hell.
Yeah. So it don't matter.
I hear you. Thanks, Tony. I appreciate you checking in. That's Tony in L.A. I like Tony. Yeah. I remember. Do you remember, Kathy? Was it? I don't know, a week or so after 9/11? Was it 9/11? And people were just freaking. Everybody was freaking and geeking, and understandably so. And we went on there. We were working for what?
That would have been the fabulous IE America Radio, Mike.
That's right.
Or at least they're not embezzling funds to the Dominican Republic or something.
Yeah.
Guam.
But remember, we went on the air that night, and I said, since everybody was freaking out, and I mean everybody was really freaking out. I mean, people were slapping bumper stickers about God bless America and putting flags up and stuff, like, you know, like making the sign of the cross or trying to get, you know, some kind of mojo working to you know, because here we our buildings have been knocked down, right? And I made the comment that that I got the feeling that black folk were dealing with this a little bit in a little bit more balanced way than white people, because black folk, this was like, you know, not to parody, but to black folk, it was like, And I suggested that if you were a white person and really tripping on this, really starting to lose it, that you had better go find yourself a black person to make friends real quick and let them help you through this. Well, that's kind of the way I feel now. You know what I'm saying?
Peace to the Middle East, peace to Islam.
Now don't get us wrong, cause we love America, but that's no reason to get hysterica. Now lay it on the serum, cause we ain't waffles, we ain't having it.
In a world going on, it's hard to think right. So much violence in the fist fight. We're going on all day and night. Do that with you.
Here's Mikey.
Ten before the hour. Thanks to the crew who brought this program to you tonight. That would be Ian Huff, Billy Foster, Ben Birch, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, and Catherine Bay. Oh, and Sharon Gordy, a military affairs correspondent. All right, back to your phone calls. Wait a second. Dave in San Mateo, California, write a subject line regarding my whining about not being able to meditate. He says, how about martial arts? You can meditate while punching the crap out of people. He says, I'm a karate instructor. It works wonders. Meditate while you're... okay. And Reg writes, regarding Dick Morris, Morris was an advisor to Bill Clinton who was fired after he was caught with a prostitute, and photos of him and the woman appeared in the tabloid press. That's where the toe-sucking came from, right? Back to your phone calls. Chase is calling from Phoenix, listening on KPHX. Chase, welcome to the program.
Thanks for taking my call, Mike.
Uh-huh.
I got a question for you. Who do you think is the worst war criminal or evil international figure, George W. Bush or Ahmadinejad in Iran?
Oh, hands down. Who is Ahmadinejad killed?
Well, he's sponsored terrorism through Hezbollah and Hamas.
Who's he killed?
Well, if I were to pay someone to kill you, I would be responsible for paying that person off just the same way Ahmadinejad.
No. Come on, Chase. You're not answering the question.
Well,
all right, let me rephrase it. Who has ordered more death? Ahmadinejad or Bush? No, seriously. If you want to play games, let's play. Who has ordered
Ahmadinejad?
How has he done that?
Ahmadinejad supports terror regime.
No. That's not what I asked you. Who is more responsible for more deaths, Bush or Ahmadinejad?
Ahmadinejad.
Okay. Thank you, Chase.
I appreciate
you checking in. Go back to your game, your marbles and dollies, and do whatever you do.
I think what's sad is that most of these callers don't understand that there isn't a larger recruiting poster boy for terrorists in the world than George W.
Bush. No, they don't.
Bush, and
I've said it before, I can't waste my time talking to someone like Chase. You know, you can ask a very simple question. Who is responsible for more death? George W. Bush, according to several sources from the UK and the United States, human rights organizations, medical societies, George W. Bush is responsible for probably over 1 million dead people. As far as Ahmadinejad, this freak who just called in has no clue as to what Ahmadinejad doesn't wipe his butt unless Mullah Khamenei tells him it's okay. So, I just don't want to waste my time with people like that.
And there is no anti-America hating terrorist that has a better friend than George Bush.
That's true.
Bin Laden must be jumping up and down with glee every time the man gets in front of the cameras. There's another 500 Al-Qaeda recruits, if you want to put it that way. And also, I would like to say to Chase, of George W. Bush and Ahmadinejad, of the two, there's only one of them who's affecting my constitutional rights.
Right. Absolutely. But you see, now you just took about 2 minutes to do that. And when I get a caller like Chase, all I want to do is make them go away. And the way we do that is put them on hold and then hang up because it's pointless. I have no desire whatsoever. A lot of people, I can remember a couple of years ago, people used to say, well, Mike, you should lighten up and try to convince these right wingers, talk to them, be like Tom Hartman.
Yeah, so you just scream at the cable guy.
Right. And, I realize that it's a waste of time. It's just an absolute waste of time. When someone calls my program and asks a question like that, which like, oh, is that a setup? Oh, my goodness, you're being so subtle. When I get a question like that, I just think, okay, oh, Jesus, all right, well, okay, I'll answer it. And, then I toss it back and say, who do you think? Oh, Ahmadinejad. Oh, how is that? And then comes the, the Rush speak or the Hannity speak or the Fox News channel speak. And it's just like, oh, my God, please go back to playing with yourself or whatever you were doing. Please. I don't know how. I've said it before. I don't mind that these right wingers listen to me. Usually in the dark, under the covers, with the lights turned off, so they can, play with themselves while they listen. But for heaven's sake, when you feel that urge to call this program, when you hear that little voice in your head that sounds like Rush or Hannity and says, call him, don't. Because all I'm going to do is just, be nasty to you and embarrass you in front of all 37 of my listeners. So, just don't. Just, stop your hand from reaching for your little cell phone or whatever you're calling me on. Just don't, all right? Chase? Well, I wish we could take more phone calls, but we can't because we're just about out of time. But we will try once again tomorrow night to do such a thing. Tomorrow night we have Uncle Mike's Story Corner. What else on Thursday? Do we have a guest tomorrow?
No, we have a... Oh, actually, yes, we do. I'm sorry, my bad. We have Mark Crispin Miller on the show tomorrow night.
Good. Okay. Yay. All right, Mark Crispin Miller tomorrow night, and we'll have Uncle Mike's Story Corner. And some more rat roasting if another book comes out. Scotty McClellan. So, I'll see you tomorrow night then, okay? Is it a date? I hope so. Take care, y'all. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.